Join the leadership whisperer, Janine Jackson, from Leading Together, as she talks with guests to uncover what makes great leaders, what creates success, and their own unique style. Get inspired, get curious, and learn how to transform your leadership.
Hello, Danny, and thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. What an exciting thing to do in lockdown.
Well, we may as well talk while we're in lockdown as do anything else. Why don't I introduce you first? So for those people who don't know who you are, I had the pleasure of getting to meet you during a PR campaign that I was doing for Frontier Services. And Danny impressed me immensely with the energy and joy and professionalism all in one bag. She is an amazing leader and an expert in media and PR, which this should be really exciting because not only does Danny have an incredible entrepreneurial spirit, but has a really amazing background in PR. So an international background. Started your own agency at the ripe old age of 28, probably better to start it then when you know it all, and then merged with another Melbourne agency and now called Soda Communications. So if anyone is actually looking for a great PR agency, I can highly recommend them. But not only are you a brilliant businesswoman and a brilliant PR chick, you are an avid runner, a philanthropist and a mum. And somehow you managed to juggle all of that in one go. So I'm really keen to have a chat to you about leadership and what it looks like for you. So thank you for coming and joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So, Danny, when I say to you, leadership is fill in the blanks.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. As you know, I really had to have a think about this because I feel like it is one of those things that is hard to summarize. Like, you know it when you see it and you can feel it when you're around a good leader, but to put it into words is tricky. And I guess for me, I suppose it's about acting and behaving in a way that inspires the people around you to be better, you know, both for themselves and as part of the community that you're in, whether that be, you know, your work community or a social group or something else that you're involved with. So I think for me, that's probably what it comes down to. And I think it's also for me, someone who is good at and able to really like create a strong community. So again, you know, that doesn't have to be in the workplace, but yeah, I think for me, that's what makes a good leader.
That's really good insights. I love that. So if you think about then in terms of what that looks like for you, who has inspired you as a great leader and why?
Well, you certainly have, although I'm sure.
Thank you.
Sure, that's not why you brought me here, but I will definitely say it. I think you're an incredible leader, and I've watched you in your role at Frontier Services, and I think you're an excellent example of walking the walk. You know, I don't think as a good leader you can be someone that sits up here, trying to keep my hand in the camera, sits up here, and everybody else is down there, and you're not. You know, I think you've got to have your sleeves rolled up and you've got to be in there and to understand what the people around you are going through and experiencing. And I think you're an incredible example of that. And also the amount that you care. And I think I'll come to this in a little while, I think, as well. But for me, I really think a good leader is also someone who like really, really cares. And I think, you know, there's certainly arguments for like not getting too emotionally involved, certainly when you're talking about business or when you're talking about work. But I don't agree with that. I think that good leaders can care and you can be emotional and you can be emotionally invested and you can be really passionate. And I definitely see that in you. Someone else who I quote a lot actually was my first ever boss when I was an intern in San Francisco. So it was my first like real job out of uni, and I managed to wrangle an internship in an agency in San Francisco, which then turned into a job, which sort of kicked off my career. And my boss at that agency was a woman called Lee Carraher, who still works in PR, has a different agency now. And she was, I don't actually know how old she would have been, you know, when you're young and you can't tell how old people are, but she was probably around my age now, you know, and I would have been 22. And so to me, she was like a grown up, and I don't know how old a grown up is, you know, when you're that old, everyone looks the same, you know. But she was a fantastic boss and a fantastic leader, and she was very funny. She didn't take herself too seriously, but you knew that she meant business as well. And she definitely, you know, had high expectations of everyone, but she also, she knew what mattered and what didn't. And I remember, and I quote this to my staff every couple of years, like, we're not curing cancer here. So just keep it into perspective. And that's different for people who are out there curing cancer. I don't know what their boss says to them, but I guess, you know, for us working in PR, she's like, if you're sick, take a sick day. If you've got vacation leave, go on holiday, like go and live your life. Like, we're not curing cancer. No one's going to die if you don't come into work. And so I loved that she was able to keep that perspective. And I think PR is definitely an industry, and certainly it used to be, I think that hopefully this has changed over time, but really demanded and expected a lot of people, and the sense that you have to be working 24 hours a day. And so that was really cool. And she was my first, you know, real boss. So I feel like I learned a lot from her, and maybe the reason why I liked those aspects of her was because it sort of mirrored the way that I see the world. And I think we're inevitably kind of attracted to people who we feel are like us. So maybe that's why. So that was the other person I was going to mention. And then on a broader scale, I really dig Richard Branson. And I'll tell you a little story about him, because I think it was when he launched Virgin Blue in Australia, or around that time when it was quite new. So it would have probably been about 2004 or 2005, and there was a big launch event in an airport hangar, and there was a plane, and it was celebrities, and I don't know, there probably would have been 1,000 people there. And my client at the time was Max Factor Makeup, and so we were providing these little like powder rooms for guests. So that's the only reason I got invited to that shindig. And Richard Branson stood at the entrance and shook hands with every single person that walked in the door. Every single person. So there was like a little like greeting, you know, like a little, you know, red carpet where people walked into this big hangar. And I thought, oh, that's cool. He's going to stand there. He's going to say hi to a few people and get, you know, there's a photo up of him greeting people. And he stood there until every single person was there. And so I got to go up to him and, oh, hi, how are you going? Oh, thanks so much for coming. Like, look, I know he was on show. I don't know what he's like in his private life, but he was just so lovely and genuine. And he just seemed really like, you know, he didn't have any of that bravado of like, oh, I'm Richard Branson. Mm-hmm. He was just like, oh, hello, and oh, thanks so much for coming. And then he mingled, and he was just like a guest at the party, and we got to talk to him later on, and we got to have photos with him. And so I think that was another example for me of someone who, you know, at the lofty heights that he was at, he just didn't seem to see himself as separate. And I think that I just thought that was incredible. And again, comes back down to that point of, as you rise through the ranks and become, you know, a leader in whatever capacity, I think there's definitely a tendency for people to, you get a bit big for your boots. You go, I'm special. I'm different to you people. I'm different to the guy down there, the parking attendant who lets me into the car park in the morning. Like, we're not the same. And yeah, I just didn't get any of that from just that, you know, that one night of sort of watching him wander around and just be Richard Branson. So I thought that was really cool. And, you know, and that says nothing again of what he's done from a business perspective. I guess for me, that was just an example of those personal characteristics that I found like so endearing and incredible for someone so big to be so cool and down to earth.
Yeah. I think that was one of the really great pieces of advice I got as a young wannabe, was be nice to everyone on the way up, because you'll meet them all on the way down. And how you treat the receptionist and the cleaner. So that was an interesting piece of advice I got when I was a little young upstart, and it has stuck with me. While we're talking about lessons, what is the hard leadership lesson that the universe keeps putting in front of you that you need to keep learning and unlearning?
Yeah, I think for me, the lesson is that there's so many parts of it that are not instinctive. Like, I think there's there's parts of it that are, you know, that are in your personality, and you, some things just come naturally, you know, and you don't even have to, you go, this is just who I am. And if people like that and they want to listen to me, that's cool. But there's other elements that for me, I definitely find challenging around sort of managing people and getting the best out of people. And that whole side of things to me has been the biggest surprise in the 14 years that I've had my business, that I just thought I would know what to do. I just thought it would be easy. Yeah. And I think I'm good at leading myself, and I'm good at leading by example, and I'm good at just being who I am. And as I said, if you like that, well, then that's cool. But trying to get the best out of the people that work for you and around you is just an ongoing challenge. And I feel like the more time goes on, the more I go, I don't even know if I'm better at this than I was 14 years ago, because obviously every person is different. And what works yeah. with one person doesn't work with somebody else. And I think the ability to be fluid in the way that you communicate. And I remember learning this, being taught this early on. Actually, my husband, who you met a moment ago, and is trying to set up my microphone and whatever, as we all do on Zoom, there's someone in the background pottering around trying to get it all to work. So we met because, and this was like nearly 20 years ago, but he was running like a communication skills corporate business. And I remember in one of those sessions talking about how you need to communicate the way other people will hear you. So because I'm very loud and energetic and I talk a lot and I take up a lot of space and that's my vibe, you've got to change the way you communicate depending on who you're talking to. And you've got to be quicker at reading their communication style and then adapting to sort of fit in with that rather than expecting everybody to fit in with the way that you do things. And I think that's probably a challenge for me. But yeah, I think I've always considered myself a natural leader in certain aspects, and that part of it doesn't feel natural to me, and it feels really hard. And that surprised me because I thought that the two sort of went hand in hand, and they just definitely don't from my experience.
People are strange beings. Is managing people, I think, is the hardest thing to do. Absolutely. Because the way you manage them yesterday, even as an individual, is different from the way they want to be managed today. And even from a COVID perspective, people are behaving differently than they behaved outside of lockdown. So,
and people are going through stuff and you don't even know. Sorry, Janine, I think we've got a tiny little delay. Carry on.
You're good. Keep going.
Yeah, people are going through stuff at home right now and you're not necessarily aware of it because you're not spending, you know, 8 hours a day in the same room or nearby each other. So that, I guess, adds another element. And I think I'm someone who, and this is a criticism of myself for sure, is that I tend to be someone who, like, I'll let you know if I'm unhappy, but I'm not that good at letting people know that I am happy. I just kind of assume, oh, you'll know if I'm not, you know. And I kind of notice when I do go out of my way to say, wow, you did a really good job on that, that I see them go, oh, thanks so much. And I'm like, oh man, I've got to do that more. I just figure, you know that I'm happy that, you know. So I think that that's also a hard thing for me that I definitely need to work on is, you know, people need that positive feedback, and they certainly need it again now more than ever when we're all working from different parts of the city.
Yeah, completely. I guess, and it's something you have to consciously think about and be aware of, which is harder than the just walk down this, you know, the other side of the office and say, oh, that was great. And then go, exactly. You actually have to make a conscious effort.
Yep, spot on.
What is the best piece of leadership advice you've been given and why? Or on the other side, what's the shittiest piece of advice that you think you need to warn us about?
Yeah, look, I was thinking about this and I don't think many people have given me advice on this, to be honest. Now I've got to start knocking on doors and asking for some. But I think, like, kind of generally speaking, I think definitely the shittiest piece of advice or the concept around leadership is kind of what I was talking about before, that you have to be really hard. You have to be, you know, and especially for women, you have to kind of have those masculine traits. and I definitely see myself doing this, and especially if I'm in a room with a bunch of men behaving in a certain way, like, and my husband will talk about, oh, you've got your work personality on, you know. And I think that's it's a hard thing to shake off even now, you know, that this sense that I must appear powerful. I need to appear powerful to people so that they respect me and so that they know that I mean what I mean, and they should listen to me and they should be falling into line and whatnot. And I just think that's, I don't agree with that at all. And I think that, again, as I was saying earlier, I think that it's incredible for the people around you and the people that work for you to see that you are a human being and that you care about people and that how they're going kind of both inside and outside of work matters to you, that you can feel things and be a feeling, emotional person and still be a great leader. And, you know, I think the more examples that we start to see of that around us, the better. But I think certainly as women, that's a tough thing to overcome, you know, the sense that you can't, yeah, you can't be perceived as weak in any way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure men feel the same way, you know. Yeah. So, and then the best piece of advice, honestly, I think, again, it comes back down to what that former boss said to me, which is kind of like, keep it all in perspective. And again, I'm very glad I'm not an oncologist, because I don't know how I would, you know, how I deal with the stress of that. But, you know, yeah, you're not curing cancer. Just keep it in perspective, you know. And for me, you, certainly as it relates to work, and again, you know, you have a job where people's lives are very directly affected by the work that you do. And that would be incredibly hard, you know. And so that little piece of advice ain't going to work for you because what you do and don't do on a day-to-day basis, you know, directly impacts the physical and mental health of real people that you're in contact with. But I suppose even so, just having broader perspective and, you know, being able to still put the focus that you need onto your family and your mental health and your social life and those kinds of things. Because I think when those things fall apart, I mean, no one can do anything, you know, when you're not, when you're not feeling sort of mentally strong in your own right, it's very difficult to lead or do anything with conviction. So I think having, it's so cliched, isn't it, about that whole work-life balance thing? Because show me one person with work-life balance, I'd be very interested to meet them. I've never met one. Honestly, have you? Have you ever met someone?
No, absolutely not. Balance? No, no.
So it's easier said than done.
My visual is more like a seesaw rather than a balance.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it.
There's times where your family becomes the higher priority, and then there's times where your work life becomes a higher priority. But it's about making sure that at some point that seesaw continues to kind of
That it's not just sitting like this. Little Johnny needs to have a turn too on that side.
Yeah,
and I think you see that you know when the shit hits the fan in your personal life. So you know, we had my husband had a death in his family a couple of months ago, and I just dropped everything for that week, you know, and I said to my staff, I'm not in, don't contact me. I didn't look at my phone. And so I think to your point about the seesaw, your life demands of you to be present in other ways, you know, you're just going to make that decision. But I think we could all definitely do a better job of trying to, have the seesaw sort of moving around a little bit more rather than being lopsided.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny. I was going to say that in December last year, we went to Noosa for our little 2-week holiday, and it was at the same time as the Northern Beaches lockdown happened here in Sydney, and we live in the Northern Beaches. So we ended up having to like quarantine in our apartment in Queensland for like 10 days once they sort of backdated if you'd come in past this date. So we didn't get much of a holiday. So we extended for another 2 weeks, and we ended up having 4 weeks in Noosa. And like, I haven't had that much time off since. I don't even know when. And of course I came home and I said, I don't want to work that hard anymore, and I'd rather have less money, and I want to be around, I want to be a mom, and I don't, you know, I just want to live my life. And, you know, fast forward 8 months and I'm working harder than I've ever worked in my life, and, you know, all of that's completely gone out the window. But again, you take a holiday, you get that perspective, you know, and you come back recharged. Yeah. And I think everyone's feeling that a little bit now, you know, it's September and I'm like, man, I feel a little bit cooked. I would love to have a holiday, but it's not happening in my 5K radius.
I'm cooked as well, Danny, and I love a holiday, but I'm like, what's the point?
Exactly. You kind of want to save it up for where you can. That's right.
And I actually just want to say the piece in and around your insights into leadership and the struggle that women have in terms of leadership and trying to be pull on the pants and be powerful and autocratic, because that's what we feel or have seen as leadership, is actually a really interesting and recurring piece. For me, I thought it was just me. And the more I talk to women about their battle, internal monologue about leadership and what that looks and feels like, it's really common.
Yeah.
That they kind of feel like they need to outbloke the blokes.
Yeah, no, but I think we do it with each other as well. We do it as women around other women. You know, it's just the sense that if I want people to think that I know what I'm doing, I need to appear in a certain way and present myself in a certain way. Yeah, and I don't know what the answer is to that, I guess.
No.
Just one of those challenges that we're all working on.
It is. And I think the thing that I found most liberating is trying to just be me. I gave myself permission to just be me, it's easier.
You get better at that as you get older, for sure. And, you know, I remember reading in my 20s and reading a magazine, remember those? And, you know, reading some celebrity story and the person would say, oh, now that I'm in my 40s, I'm just so much more confident with who I am than I was in my 20s and 30s. And okay, yeah. But it really does happen. You know, you just go, I just don't care anymore. Like, if you think I'm a goose, oh, well, you know.
Yeah,
and some of the questions that, because to our listeners, Janine was kind enough to send me the questions in advance so I could have a little think about what I would say. And yeah, some of these questions I was like, I don't know. And then I thought, well, I'm just going to say so, because I am who I am, and hopefully I've got something of interest to say. Otherwise, we got problems, or you do. Can't delete it. It's live.
I think this actually leads right into beautifully then. Leadership is part of, you know, learning as you grow and as you get older. One of the three leadership books that you would personally recommend?
So this is one of those times when I'm going to out myself and say, I don't really read leadership books.
I really
don't, but I'll tell you, but I do have some book recommendations that I think are definitely relevant. So one of them is called, and I actually should have checked. Yes, there it is. It's right in front of me. It's called Culture Fix. Oh, there's lots of leadership books on my husband's bookshelf. I could pretend that I read that, but I haven't yet. but this book, Culture Fix, was a brilliant book, and it's how to create a great place to work. And I don't know if you can see, but I've like highlighted it, and it was just one of those books where there was so much good stuff in there about how to create a great workplace where people are engaged in what they're doing, and they are, you know, again, you're getting the best out of them, and you're creating a great place to work. And that's something that for me has always been really, really important, is that I'm very driven by like fun and being happy. And we actually did, you know, you can do all those Myers-Briggs tests and things like that. Well, there was one that was kind of specific to culture, and what came across as of these sort of eight values, then my number one driver was pleasure, which I thought was really interesting. And I think after that was result, which is not good news for my clients. But I think for me, like, I want to be happy at work. And so, you know, that was part of what was awesome about starting my own agency, was I could choose to work with clients that I was really interested in and passionate about. Clients like you guys, like Frontier Services, and if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. So for me, that's always been a big driver, and I really want the people that work for me to like their work too. And I'm sure there are days where, you know, I'm sure they don't feel that way, but but this book was excellent. And it's the kind of thing, to be honest, that I probably should read, you know, once a year, because I'm sure I've forgotten half of what was in there. And I had all these ideas and things that I was going to do after I read it. But, you know, that culture thing is kind of another example when we were talking about leadership, about the things that are instinctive, that, you know, you can go, well, I set the culture based on who I am and what I want the place to be. And that's the culture. And that's not what it is. You know, your culture is created by everybody in the organization, and there's ways to make them feel a part of even defining and building what that culture looks like, and being able to even like put it on paper together. And so we did a couple of those exercises probably a couple of years ago now again, so we should do it again. But I, yeah, really, really recommend that book. And then another one that I read recently, which is quite a new book, and I believe it's just gone into reprint. It's called Cult Status. I don't have it in front of me to show it to you, but it's written by a guy called Tim Duggan, who I have been lucky to work with and know personally over the years. He is the guy that started the digital sort of publishing platform Junkie and Punky, which are these very millennial focused news sites. And he's had other businesses in the past. So this book, Cult Status, is about how to create a cult brand that sort of resonates with millennials. And that was another great business book that didn't feel like I was reading a business book. And I think one of the reasons why I don't read leadership books and things like that is that people who don't know much about PR, we do a lot of writing and also reading. And, you know, I think when you're doing that in your day-to-day life, it's really hard for me when I switch off to want to read work things, because I'm like, I just need to like read a novel or disappear into some other place if I'm going to read a book. But Cult Status was also a brilliant book, like practical exercises that you could do, and I think anyone could take something out of. So those are my two like really awesome kind of, I do think they're leadership books, because certainly, you know, culture comes from leaders and whatever brand you're creating, you know, and however you're bringing that to life, obviously a lot of that comes from the leader as well. And I really love Brené Brown. I love everything. I listen to her podcast a lot, and I love, you know, how she talks about vulnerability, which is very much what you and I were just talking about before. And I heard her speak once at a Business Chicks event, and I found this really, really interesting when she said that, what do you think the number one behavior is in employees that instills trust in employers? So what's the one thing that you can do as an employee that will make your employer trust you? And I don't know if you've heard this, but, you know, people putting up their hands and saying, you know, tell the truth and, you know, I don't know, whatever things you think of. And she said that in the research that she'd done, the number one thing you could do was ask for help. And I thought that was so interesting, because coming back to that weakness thing again, you know, we don't want to appear weak. If I ask for help, then you're going to think as my boss that I don't know what I'm doing. But actually it's the opposite. It's that if you ask for help, I'm going to know that you're going to tell me when the shit's hit the fan. If you never ask me for help, I don't know whether you're going to tell me when something goes wrong. And I just love that. And I tell my staff that as well. And certainly the number of people that have worked for me over the years, there was one girl who was awesome. She was great at what she did, but I think her boss before me was a little bit like, he would sort of trick her into walking into a trap. And so he'd ask her about something, then she'd tell her, and then he'd go, ha, well, why haven't you done this or something? So I'd say, how are you going with this? Like, just asking. And she'd go, yep, great. Yep. It's all done. And I'd be like, oh, is it? Okay, cool. And then I'd found out that it wasn't. And I'd go, why did you tell me it was done? She goes, I don't know. I freaked out. And, you know, all you have to say is, no, I haven't got to that yet, because I'm busy on X, Y, and Z, and I think I'm going to look at it next week. And I'd go, great. So yeah, Brené Brown. That was a long, long answer to a short question, but yeah, love her.
Me too. I'm a fangirl of Brené Brown. I've got a really good question that's been asked, and so I'm going to ask you.
Sure.
How often do you think a good leader should check in?
Oh boy, oh boy. I'm really bad at this. I think, you know, if we're talking about in lockdown, I feel like we probably need to increase it from what you normally would. But I'd say in day to day, let's say we were in you know, regular pre-COVID world and we're all in the office, you know, daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, yearly, in different formats. So you should have a sense of how are you going? What are you working on? You know, that obviously I would expect that to be happening all the time. But in terms of those formal, how are you doing? I'd say probably once a month for me. Yes. And my staff are going to listen to this and laugh because I don't do it often enough. And it's really unusual, I think, for people to have their leader or their boss or the person they report into to just call them up and go, how are you going? How are you? And I think especially now we need that more than ever. And one thing that, so I actually hired kind of a 2IC role 6 months ago, and that person who, Janine, I don't think you've had much contact with yet, her name's Hannah, and she actually worked for me as an intern 13 years ago, and now she's back as a senior account director, which is really cool.
Yeah,
she's taken on a lot of that role of mentoring, and you know, so they do a daily like check-in scrum, and then we do a weekly WIP, and then there's, you know, quarterly personal development plans and all of that kind of thing. But I think it really actually occurred to me just last night, because I did this, I Zoom called one of my team and just said, oh, I miss you. Like, I haven't. And she's like, oh, I know. And you've been really busy and it's all good. And we just had a little glass of wine together for like 25 minutes and just talked about stuff. And we did talk about work a little bit, but I really liked that too. And I'm sure she liked it as well. So that's one thing that, yeah, I think I need to pay more attention to and do a better job of, for sure.
So what do you think, and we might have already kind of touched on some of this, but what is the one stereotype or myth of leadership that we need to let go of?
Yeah, I think we've talked about it. Yeah, that sense that you need to be a certain type of person. And I think if you are that type of person, great. But that, you know, you touched on it, giving yourself permission to be yourself and being authentic is, I think, the best thing that you could possibly do. And if you're trying to mold yourself into a particular type of leader, and, you know, even when you asked me to be on this podcast and I was like, oh, why me? Like, I'm not a leader. What do I do? And again, because there's this idea that, oh, a leader is someone that runs a big corporation and has, you know, 1,000 staff and wears a suit and sits in a boardroom. And you know, even I still think like that, which is so archaic and silly. But we have the ability to lead in all aspects of our lives. It's not just at work. So yeah, I think that idea of being authentic and really genuinely embracing what makes you you and figuring out what parts of that you can sort of harness, and then the other, you know, as I've admitted to, that we've all got parts of ourselves that maybe aren't that finally attuned to leadership. So then you go, okay, well, that's the stuff that I want to work on. But this is the stuff that I think is naturally in me and my personality that I think I should make the most of, instead of trying to hide them and pretend that we're all the same.
Oh, that is brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant.
Yes. Excellent.
You feel like you got your gold star now?
I did it, yes.
What do you think then is your best leadership quality or characteristic maybe that every leader should actually have? And they can be different.
Well, I had to ask my team that question, and of course as if they'd tell me the truth, but you know, hopefully they did. if you would have asked me, or when I thought about this before I asked them, I think that one of the things, and it's funny that you mentioned it too, is my energy and my like general positivity about life and the world and everything kind of working out. And I think that, again, it ties into, well, this is the kind of workplace I want to create, where people are happy at work and they love what they do and they feel inspired and energized. And I think I do bring a pretty good amount of energy to what I do. And I think, again, that comes down to, well, that's just part of who I am. And so that's the stuff that's just, I am what I am. But I think that's actually really useful. And I think that it's hard to sort of imagine a good leader being low energy, isn't it, when you think about it, or negative. You know, you do need to, again, sort of set the tone and lead by example. And if I'm sort of coming to the table like this, well, I can't exactly expect you to be like, hey, you know. But again, I'm myself, and I think I don't take things too seriously. And on the flip side, I do think that my staff know that I have very high expectations of them, as I do for myself. Mm. And they definitely know that. But on the other hand, I think I'm pretty selective about what's a big deal and what's not a big deal, and most things can be resolved. And then when I asked them, which I thought was really sweet, you know, a couple of them said, oh, you really care about us, which I thought was really nice. I said, no, I don't care about you people. I'm just kidding. I really do care about them. Of course I do. You know, you spend more time with your work. Well, not right now because we're all at home, but you spend more time with your workmates than you do with your spouse. So of course I care about them, and I care much more. We had a situation with one team member who was having a really hard time kind of managing the demands of home. She's got a young child, and she had started out 3 days a week and ramped up to 4 days a week on my request because she was great and I wanted her around more. And I said, would you like to go to 4 days a week? And she said, yes, I would. That sounds great. And then just started noticing, that she just didn't seem as happy. And, you know, a few chats were had, and in the end, you know, she just said she's just having a hard time like managing her home life and the demands of home and not being around as much. And so, you know, straight away I'm like, go back to 3 days. Like, you got to do what you need to do to be happy and to be healthy. And again, to come to work feeling like you're winning. You know, if you're coming to work every day feeling like a loser, I'm losing at home, and then I'm bringing that to work, and so then I feel like I'm losing at work. It's just a shit. No one wants to be in that place. And again, like, I remember saying this to her, I care way more about you and your mental health and how you're feeling than I do about work. And so hopefully that's something that makes me a good leader too, I hope.
That is, yes. Can I come work for you? What a beautiful thing to do. Yes. What? Oh gosh, I didn't realize I was on a job interview, so I feel like I got my gold star.
You're hired. You don't have to tap dance for me, Janine.
What do you do to continue to grow as a leader? I think you've pretty much got a lot of your ducks in a row, but what are the things that you do to continue to learn?
Yeah, I think one thing that I found super helpful is you mentioned that I started my business back in 2007, and then it wasn't until I think 2019 that we merged with another boutique agency in Melbourne called Soda Communications, and we took on their name. And so Chris Mannix, who runs our Melbourne office, and we're now partners, it was really incredible for me for the first time in a long time to have someone else that I could watch, and watch her in meetings and watch her in presentations and listen. You know, when you're at the top, it's you're not getting that many opportunities to learn from other people. And so that's been really incredible for me to just, even, you know, down to really little things, to watch the way that she'd answer a question or the way that she'd say something in a meeting, and I'd go, oh, I would never say that. That was so good. And same thing by hiring really good people. You know, Hannah, who I mentioned, who's come aboard 6 months ago, I've already learned heaps from her. You know, she's been out into the world working at different places, and she's brought that knowledge with her. And so I think I've definitely know that I'm not the best at everything, and you need to bring in the right people around you to learn from them and to have that expertise. And I certainly have had the opportunity to work with an amazing variety of clients and characters and personalities who are either in managerial, you know, very senior positions in their organization like you, or they're entrepreneurs, you know, of a startup. They've got that, you know, crazy entrepreneurial spirit. And so you certainly learn a lot from having contact with those people. And I think that's one of the really great things about working in an agency environment versus being in-house, is the breadth and depth of companies and businesses and people that you come into contact with. And then the last thing I'd say is, I do love podcasts. And I listen to a lot of also podcasts, and I do like reading books, kind of psychology books and things like that as well, around, you know, different personality types. And I think that's super helpful too. I think there's a lot to be learnt about how we relate to each other as people that you can then go, wow, that would actually be really helpful in the workplace. And just to learn to communicate better and express ourselves better and realize, be more tuned in to what's going on with the people around you. So that's probably something else that I'm quite interested in.
So you've already talked about the gorgeous intern Hannah, about how you've brought her back. So What do you look for when you're promoting somebody or placing someone else in a position of responsibility? What are the key traits and what are you looking for?
Yes, this is a very good question, actually, and it also made me think, because it is different, you know, with everyone. Obviously, everybody brings something unique to the table, but I think at the end of the day, I definitely look for people who are very intelligent and switched on and smart and curious. I think in PR, you have to be very articulate, you know, an excellent written communicator. You have to be able to write and, you know, have a really, be able to sort of grasp different businesses and concepts quite quickly and then translate that into how does this then become a media story? How does this then become interesting to the media? So those are some of the hard skills, definitely. Also, obviously, the ability to inspire that confidence in our clients. You know, I definitely, yeah. I had one staff member who was incredible in so many ways, but she was almost like a little bit apologetic, such a sweet, lovely person. And it was one thing I had to work on with her. You know, you got to take your seat at the table. You know, we're here in a consulting capacity to advise our clients. So you don't want to sort of come at that too much like, oh, we just thought, would it be okay if, you know, you need to say, our recommendation is this, and we think this would be really good. You know, if you're sort of coming to it that way, your client's going to go, I don't know. You don't seem sure. I don't know. So someone that definitely sort of inspires that confidence about themselves. And then I guess some of the soft skills, because you can train someone in a lot of those areas, but I think the stuff that you can't train is, you know, someone's attitude, how positive they are. Mm-hmm. Are they going to be nice to the people around them, you know? And again, that comes down to a cultural thing again. Like I have a very firm no dickheads policy. I don't want to work for clients who are dickheads. I don't want clients to be dickheads to my staff, and I don't want my staff to be dickheads to each other. And pardon my French, but I definitely look for that. How is this person going to fit in culturally? Are they a good person? Are they a kind person? And you know, it's hard to know that up front. Which is why it's always great, which is why you're hired, Janine, because it's much better to hire someone you know, I think, than someone that you've you know, just interviewed. But yeah, that just having that caring persona where they're, you know, they're good at their job and they can get, you know, they can deliver on what you expect of them, but they're also a nice person to be around. And that's really, really important to me.
Yeah, definitely want to work on your team, Danny. I love the no dickheads policy. Yeah. I know, very much so.
It's firm. It's a firm policy.
Yeah. I think once you've worked with one or two, you kind of figure out that's not worth it. Life's too short.
Yeah. And it's the one thing actually that I will arc up the most about is if one of my staff is like mistreated by a client, I go crazy. And it's probably only happened about twice in 14 years. But I resigned a very, very good client immediately when it happened several years ago because I was just like, I'm not on my watch. And yeah, so I'm quite protective of my little ducklings too.
My little ducklings. Yeah. And then I guess, see, this is why I wanted to chat to you. What are you truly grateful for right now?
Ooh.
What fills your cup?
Yeah, I mean, this is such a good question for right now too, because I think I've definitely been trying to look for those things that I'm grateful for at a time where, you know, we've had a lot taken away from us. And I'm pretty pragmatic about the whole thing. You know, it is what it is. We need to do the right thing. We need to give everybody that wants to be vaccinated that opportunity to be vaccinated before we can open up. So I'm totally down for the lockdown in order to protect, you know, our health system and people that don't want to get sick and potentially die. So I'm all for that. But I definitely, you know, you've got to look at the simple things right now. So I'm super grateful. I live on the Northern Beaches in Sydney, where it's quite a big local government area. So we can travel within that for exercise. We've got beautiful beaches and fresh air. And so I'm super grateful for that. As you mentioned, I do a lot of running. So I'm, you know, really grateful that I have a body that moves, although not very well these days, I tell you. But it's still, you know, I can go out my front door and I can go for a run. I can see the ocean and that's incredible. Super grateful for my family. I've got a little 8-year-old daughter who's a funny little thing and my husband, and we've got two rescue dogs, and I'm so grateful for my pets right now as well. Like you're a huge animal person, but just having animals around, you know, it makes the house feel fuller. They're so funny. They force you to go out and exercise. You got to take them out into the sunshine. So, and eating a lot of good food, super grateful that we can get anything we want delivered to us. We've eaten like two amazing restaurant meals in the last week because it's my husband's birthday that we've been sent from amazing like Sydney restaurants that would never normally deliver to the Northern Beaches, and suddenly they're delivering. So there's some cool things like that that have come out. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think all of us at the moment are just trying to be grateful for those little things because, yeah, it could be a lot worse.
Well,
what are you grateful for, Zane?
What am I grateful for? There's a number of things very similar for me. You know, I am really grateful that I've got two very healthy kids. I'm grateful that I hit the jackpot with my husband. He's an amazing human being who keeps me sane and grounded. I am very fortunate that during lockdown, I live on acreage, small acreage. So I've got ponies and goats and all those lovely things that make me get up really early in the morning to feed and do all those sorts of things. And even just the 5 minutes of walking through my backyard with a dam and listening to birds and grounding myself before I start the craziness is really helpful. Really? I do pinch myself that, you know, this is the life I'm living. So, yeah, I am grateful for the opportunity to be able to live the life I do.
Oh, well deserved.
Thank you.
I love saying you've got to keep posting videos of your animals, the funny little goats.
They're good fun. And you keep posting your crazy, hilarious videos. They make me laugh every time.
I haven't done one for a while.
Bring back the humour.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. I will. I will rise above. I'll make something this weekend. I really like making people laugh. That's the thing. I like making people laugh.
I highly recommend following Danny's Instagram. It is hilarious.
I have a fake influencer persona. So,
it's definitely possible.
It's good for a
giggle. It is good for a giggle. Thank you for bringing the humour. And being somebody who is brave enough to put themselves out there in their wholeness, regardless of trying to be something that you're not. So I have enjoyed immensely having the opportunity to have a chat with you. Thank you so very much. And for anybody who is interested, I strongly suggest looking up Soda Communication if you're after a good PR chick, because they've got a few definitely worth looking at.
Thanks, Janine. Thank you so much for having me. It was super nice to talk to you. And as I said to you, I'd like someone to ask you these questions. I would love to know your answers to these questions. So I'll table that for one. Interview yourself.
You might need.
We'll swap roles.
Yeah, that'll be great. All right.
No, really, I'd love to hear you. Anyway, thank you. I really enjoyed it. Thanks, Janine.
Thanks, Danny.
Leadership takes courage and persistence. Great leaders don't set out to be great. They set out to make a difference. Subscribe at leadingtogether.net.au or follow us on our socials for more information and inspiration on leadership.